Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, September 17th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. President Robert Mugabe fires Sport and Recreation Minister Andrew Langer, long linked to ousted Vice President Joyce Mujuru's faction in ZANU-PF, and replaces him with the former broadcaster and journalist Makhosini Hlongwane. Analysts dismiss President Mugabe's legislative agenda for the current parliament, saying it does not contain anything new save for old plans.
So what I was saying is the president can read the correct speech or the wrong speech, but the speech has to have a meaning. We need implementation.
And some street traders operating on the streets of Harare are complaining that municipal police officers are demanding bribes to allow them to sell their wares, but Harare denies the allegations.
We are facing the challenges of police, municipal police. They are confiscating our goods. And when you say, I want my goods, they don't give you the goods without paying them. They demand money from us. They say a certain figure, it's like $2, $5. You give them as token to regain your goods back.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. President Robert Mugabe has fired Sport and Recreation Minister Andrew Langer, long linked to the ousted Vice President Joyce Mujuru's faction in ZANU-PF, and replaced him with former broadcaster and journalist Makhosini Hlongwane, who was appointed minister without portfolio last week. A memo from Meshack Smanda, the chief secretary to the president and cabinet, confirmed Langer's sacking and at the same time clarified the culture part of the sports ministry had been moved to the new Ministry of Rural Development, Preservation and Promotion of Culture. Langer, who lost his position as a regional chairman in ZANU-PF following purges that began in December following the party's acrimonious congress, was accused of aligning Mrs. Mujuru but had survived the cabinet chop. Dozens of other ministers and officials allegedly linked to the former vice president were fired soon after the December Congress. Meanwhile, after starting President Robert Mugabe's legislative agenda for the third session of the 8th Parliament, that was tabled Wednesday, following Tuesday's mix-up in which he read the wrong speech, political and economic analysts and ordinary Zimbabweans say it's not very different from the first and second sessions. Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
A closer look at President Mugabe's legislative agenda tabled yesterday shows that most of the bills he says will be brought to Parliament this session should have been dealt with in the first or second sessions of the 8th Parliament. The Land Commission, Consumers Protection, National Border Authority and the Zimbabwe Standard Regulatory Authority bills are among the many pieces of legislation that have been on the country's legislative agenda for a long time now. Political commentator Masimba Kuchera says the agenda is not new, adding lawmakers must put the executive to task over their failure to bring the bills to Parliament.
I think they should be able to question these issues and question the ministers responsible to task for not delivering as expected.
Media Center Director Ernest Mzengi said President Mugabe has laid what might appear a good agenda on the surface, but adds the major challenge is its implementation. He adds the other challenge is the quality of the laws that would be enacted, given that Parliament recently passed the Labour Law Amendment Bill even after its own legal committee had said it violated the Constitution.
We also have to be worried about the qualitative content of the laws that are to come out. Are they going to be democratic laws? Are they going to be laws that can help in terms of restoring a good image to Zimbabwe? Those are the worries. I'm more worried not in the agenda, but in the implementation of the agenda and the manner of implementation.
Harare residents like Peter Ngorima of Mbare commended President Mugabe for proposing the public health bill, saying if enacted, this would no doubt ensure health care access for all, as only just over 1 million people in the country currently have health insurance. Ngorima said the president's proposal to deal with corruption is a good idea, but said it's time the government acted tough, as graft is now the country's number one enemy.
The president hasn't been taking any action on corruption. There's a lot of corruption going on in the cabinet ministers involved and coming down to the junior officers. So what I was saying is the president can read the correct speech or the wrong speech, but the speech has to have a meaning. We need implementation.
Just like most lawmakers, analysts and ordinary Zimbabweans expressed worry over Tuesday's mix-up, which led to President Mugabe reading a wrong speech during the official opening of parliament. Mlondolozi Ndlovu said this raised questions about the president's ability to run the country.
It gives them every reason to say if he could read a whole speech and not understand what he was saying, surely he must step aside. Then secondly, it shows how the people are leading us, how the people around the president are sleeping on duty.
Ngorima said, wrong or correct, what the president said in setting the legislative agenda must be implemented.
Whether the speech was wrong or correct, we still believe that what the president preaches is what must be done on the ground.
Political economist Javus Leshumba said Tuesday dented the country's image, as it left many people locally and internationally wondering whether the sender was still holding in Zimbabwe.
The fact that he did not recognize that it was a wrong speech, so that confirms that the center, which is the head of state at this particular moment in Zimbabwe, is not stable. In the absence of predictable succession mechanism, generally the investors tend to worry more about what are the potential opportunities that the country is likely to be stable.
President Robert Mugabe, for the first time in his 35-year rule, read a wrong speech at the official opening of parliament, leading the opposition to question his ability to remain at the helm, while his ZANU-PF lawmakers said it was a simple mistake which had been rectified by the presentation of the correct statement yesterday. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Still with ZANU-PF, a former information minister and senior ZANU-PF official Sikhanyiso Ndlovu, who died in Bulawayo Tuesday after a major stroke, has been declared a national hero and will be buried at the National Heroes Acre on Saturday. The 70-year-old educationist's body will be flown to Harare tomorrow after a ceremony at the Bulawayo Amphitheatre, according to state media reports ahead of his burial. A senior policy analyst at a Washington think tank has dismissed any hope of renewed U.S. interest on Zimbabwe in light of the emergence of Tendai Biti as the head of the new opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. Or the speculation surrounding the possible entrance into politics of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru following the release of her manifesto last week. Marion Tupi of the Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity, or Cato Institute, says who leads Zimbabwe after President Robert Mugabe is increasingly becoming a non-issue for the U.S., which he says is more concerned with its own domestic presidential campaigns and foreign concerns presented by Syria, Russia, and China. He attributes Mujuru's lackluster appeal to the U.S. to what he described as her tainted past.
When people look at somebody like Joyce Mujuru, somebody who has been complicit in some Mugabe's greatest crime, somebody who has never spoken against corruption, malfeasance, misgovernance, why should anybody think that Joyce Mujuru is getting into politics for any other reasons but self-enrichment and power-grabbing? No, I don't think people look at Joyce Mujuru as a breath of fresh air. She is deeply tainted with her past association with the Mugabe regime, and she is definitely not somebody that the United States should put great hopes in.
Now, some had thought that the former finance minister, Tendai Biti, was a breath of fresh air. He was credited with doing some near miracles with the economy at the time. You don't agree?
Even if Biti was an economic genius who could put Zimbabwe back together, do I think that the current rulers of Zimbabwe, the people who matter, the military, the ZANU-PF Politburo, do I think they're going to permit him to take over at the next election? No, I don't. I think the country is just going to continue to deteriorate. I don't see Mr. Biti as a president, not simply because I disagree with him on some of his economics, but also because I don't think he's got any hope of becoming a president.
If it's anything to go by, the recent visit to Zimbabwe by the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, Shannon Smith, and then also there was a congressional delegation that went to Zimbabwe, all who indicated that Zimbabwe was not off the radar, they still want to engage Zimbabwe. So do you not think that there could be a renewed interest in Zimbabwe based on a new leader?
Well, once again, we have no idea who the new leader would be. I mean, it could be Mr. Mugabe's wife. It could be Ms. Mujuru, who is, as I said, a person from the past rather than a visionary thinker of the future. I can assure you and all your listeners that large-scale Western investment in Zimbabwe is a complete pipe dream, absolute pipe dream, so long as Zimbabwe does not restore the rule of law, private property rights, and so long as the indigenization policies remain in place. And I don't see any changes under the Mujuru presidency or in the short term. So I'm afraid I have become a bit of a skeptic following the end of the power-sharing agreement.
And that was Marian Tupi, senior political analyst at the Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity, or Cato Institute, in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, President Robert Mugabe and many other leaders will be converging in New York this month for the annual United Nations General Assembly. In an interview with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, the former president of UNGA, Sam Kutesa of Uganda, said Africa is still pushing for a seat on the Security Council.
Well, it's actually not President Mugabe alone. It's presidents all over the world. Since 2005, they have demanded for immediate reform of the Security Council. And it's quite right, because we now, for example, coming to this is our 70th anniversary since the formation of the United Nations. But over the years, since this call has been made, we have been restating our position. Africa restates its position.
Some street traders operating in Harare Central Business District are complaining that municipal police officers are demanding bribes to allow them to sell their wares. Thomas Jiripasi went into the streets of Harare and filed this report from the capital.
Some street-side vendors are alleging that municipal cops are demanding bribes for them to sell their wares, or they risk losing their goods being confiscated. One such trader is Lynette Marongwe, who sells second-hand clothes along Julius Nyerere Way.
The challenge we are facing now as vendors, we have no money to support our children because they are always taking our money. When they grab our stuff, they don't turn it back. They just take it for free. Now we cannot survive in town as usual. We cannot take our children to school. We have no money. That's our challenges.
Another vendor, Tendekai Mashavira, told Studio 7 that what worries her the most is that council employees are taking home huge sums of money daily after collecting bribes. As a result, Mashavira says she will be left with almost nothing for the upkeep of her four children, all of whom are of school-going age.
The challenges we are facing right now as we are selling our products as vendors, we are facing the challenges of police, municipal police. They are confiscating our goods, and when you say, "I want my goods," they don't give you the goods without paying them. They demand money from us. They say a certain figure is like $2, $5. You give them as token to regain your goods back. So we end up losing either the goods or the money.
The board chairperson of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Sten Zorwadza, tells Studio 7 that council cops are being protected by their seniors at townhouse when such corruption cases are reported to the police.
If vendors report these unscrupulous municipal police officers to ZRP, their superiors immediately come in and protect them. They do not just protect them, but they ensure that they bar any such vendor from trading within CBD or similar or other areas.
Studio 7 failed to get a comment from police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Cherith Charamba, who repeatedly said that she was in meetings. But council spokesperson Michael Chideme tells Studio 7 that his council's corps are acting professionally.
Our municipal police is not in the business of collecting bribes. They are in the business of policing our streets, and in this case, to ensure that vendors only trade from designated sites.
Zorwadza also claimed that some of his organization's members that acquired vendors' cards from the city council were failing to get places to trade from at the newly designated vending points, although authorities continue to charge them. This, he says, is tantamount to fraud.
They have sold permits or cards to many, many vendors. And from the day a vendor received their card, they get charged. And some vendors are now owing in excess of $100.
But Chideme dismissed Zorwaza's claims, saying some vendors were deliberately choosing not to operate from their designated places.
I think anybody who got a vendor's card, that vendor's card was issued with a specific trading site. So people should go to those sites for which they were issued the vendor cards.
The Harare City Council recently embarked on an exercise to relocate street traders to new vending points amid resistance from the vendors who were demanding that proper facilities be installed at the new sites before they could move. Most of the new vending sites have no proper ablution facilities. At the same time, most of the vendors who were displaced from the Central Business District are now returning to their old vending points, arguing that there is no business at the new vending sites. Most of the vendors are also demanding that government provides the more than 2 million jobs that President Robert Mugabe promised in his campaign for re-election in 2013. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Now we take a look at regional and international news. Republican presidential frontrunner and billionaire Donald Trump took center stage yesterday at his party's second major debate in the nomination race, facing a barrage of charges that he's unfit to be commander-in-chief. And authorities in Chile have ordered residents to evacuate the coast after a powerful 8.3 magnitude earthquake and four strong aftershocks prompted a tsunami warning. And the United Nations Security Council is unanimously demanding the immediate release of the president, prime minister, and others being held hostage in Burkina Faso by renegade members of the presidential guard. Media advocacy group Mr. Zimbabwe has filed a fresh application to invalidate the criminal defamation law after the organization was in July asked by Chief Justice Godfrey Chijausiku to file additional heads of argument in a case that was before the courts. Mr. Zimbabwe filed the case after journalists Ngaba Machazi, Godwin Mangujia, Sidney Saize, and Roger Stringer approached the courts to have the law removed from the statutes. Zimbabwe Independent newspaper editor Dumisani Muleya tells Studio 7 editors met at the weekend and resolved that the law should be removed because it's a colonial relic that has outlived its usefulness.
That law should have long ago been removed from our statutes. It has been removed almost everywhere in Commonwealth jurisdictions which have similar background with Zimbabwe. And the President Mugabe's claim that the private media is blowing issues out of proportion and writing lies, undoubtedly triggered by the inconvenient pointed coverage of the ZANU-PF's internal strife, things like economic implosions, and the general shambles around it. It's frankly ridiculous. There is no basis for him to say that.
But Mr. Mlea, we have heard heard, apart from Mr. Mugabe, other people as well complaining that the media is abusing its privileges. Therefore, it needs to be curtailed through laws like defamation laws. What do you say?
Let me make it very clear up front. The media has a responsibility to report in an ethical, in a very fair and accurate way. But we do not accept politicians, particularly Mugabe himself, whom we know that they have a long history of hostility towards the media, towards any center of defense. Right? If you look at his history from 1980, all the time he's always complaining about one thing or another, as long as put him under scrutiny. In 1980, it was Joshua Nkomo who was the problem. It later became Tekke who was the problem. It later became Morgan Tsvangirai, and now is the media.
That was Zimbabwe Independent newspaper editor Dumisani Muleya. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. As reported earlier, Parliament now has on record President Robert Mugabe's speech setting the legislative agenda for the third session of the 8th Parliament of the country after his mix-up Tuesday that has been widely publicized. For perspective on the agenda that includes amending and bringing in new pieces of legislation, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Nkululeko Sibanda, a lecturer at Huddersfield University, and Washington Metlo Makulu, chief economist with Resource Exploitation Watch. Metlo Makulu says Mr. Mugabe touched on some critical areas in his speech.
The first one that I would want to point out is the minerals exploration and marketing cooperation bill. This obviously seeks to transform the current Minerals Marketing Corporation of Zimbabwe into an exploration company. Remember, one of the critical areas in terms of turning the Zimbabwean economy is going to be the mining sector, which is going to be critical in terms of ensuring that the sustainable economic growth. But for that to happen, there has to be a lot of exploration that needs to be done. So that is the first one. Secondly, you also touched on the issue of the Labour Act.
Dr. Sibanda, I'll come to you on that point. What are some of the critical bills in your view?
I think that for me, it was certainly a sense of being disappointed by the absence of certain specific issues to be part of the legislative agenda of Parliament. For example, the President makes no direct inference to the need to align the country. And I think that's one of the first few things that you ought to do. Also, when you look at the issues that matter the most to the Zimbabwean economy, one of the first and primary things that you do to a dying economy is identify areas that need to be woken up, areas that are holding the economy back. And the things that hold the economy back currently in our country are investor confidence, and investor confidence is certainly as a result of the poor political environment, but also as a direct result of corruption.
Mr. Metlo Makulu, looking at what Dr. Sibanda is talking about, the issue of corruption, the president did point out the need for a national code of corporate governance, the bill itself, that will bolster the fight against corruption.
Well, the issue of corruption, I think, has been debated and dissected for you know, since independence, and that remains an albatross around Zimbabwe's neck. I think there is that acknowledgement, even in government circles, that corruption is a scourge that needs to be addressed. But my view is that corruption, the challenge that when we look at corruption in Zimbabwe, we only look at it from the private public sector perspective. But there is also endemic corruption within the private sector. So we need to approach corruption wherever it occurs, whether it's in the private sector or it's in the public sector. But the challenge that we also face is that you find that even when you look at current laws, there are adequate laws on our books. The problem we have in this country is enforcement of the laws that already exist.
And Dr. Sibanda, overall, there has been the main question of political will or political willingness. Do you think that this time around there will be that political willingness?
You see, the biggest problem with dealing with the Zimbabwean crisis, the Zimbabwean problem, is that actually there is nothing you everything you do, eventually you've got to come back to the question you've just asked. Eventually, that is the question that's got to be asked first in order for everything else to move. It's like getting a car moving. You know, if everything is all right and you don't have you don't have a starter in the car, or you don't have anybody to push the car, then you're just as good as without a car.
And Mr. Mesomakulu, looking at the overall speech, President Mugabe did touch on varying issues. Will there be that political willingness?
I think we have no options. I mean, if you look at the economic situation, as it continues to deteriorate, if you look at all the economic indicators, there is a black cloud on the horizon. And so there is no option but to move forward and to implement whatever legislative provisions that the president has set out.
Washington, Mehlomakulu is the chief economist with Resource Exploitation Watch. You also heard the views of Nkululeko Sibanda, lecturer at Huddersfield University in the UK. When Zimbabwe came out of a brutal war of liberation in 1980, then Prime Minister Robert Mugabe offered a hand of reconciliation to former white minority colonizers, saying oppression by blacks or whites was despicable. In this first part of a two-part series on white Africans, we are focusing on what it means to be a white person living in Zimbabwe today. VOA's Gibbs Dube reports.
Most Zimbabweans can clearly identify this tune, which is a symbol of the country's independence from British rule. Among the people who have pledged allegiance to the national anthem are whites who were born and bred in Zimbabwe. One of them is David Coulthard, an attorney, former Rhodesian serviceman and education minister, who says this is his only home.
I have an affinity for the flag. I have an affinity. I actually love our national anthem. I love its tune. Some of the words I feel are divisive, but there are many things that make me feel Zimbabwean.
Coulthard says most Zimbabweans who endured years of brutal abuse at the hands of white settlers are not racist.
Zimbabwe remains a wonderful place to live in because despite all the hate speech that is spewed out by ZANU-PF, the fact of the matter is that we have remarkably good race relations in this country.
According to the former MTC lawmaker, his family has been living in harmony with blacks for many years, an indication that whites are part of life in Zimbabwe.
I identify with many things, mainly the people. I feel at home with all our people. I feel very accepted by Zimbabwean people across all racial groups. The warmth that I and my family receive is very hard to describe, but it's constant. So I think that that's the number one thing that makes me feel at home, because of that sense of acceptance.
This is despite the fact that Coulthard was in the Rhodesian military fighting against so-called terrorists aligned to ZAPU and ZANU. The former lawmaker is well known for assisting in the crafting of a comprehensive booklet on alleged fire brigade atrocities in Matabeleland and the Midlands provinces in the 1980s. Another white Zimbabwean, Ian Kay, who describes himself as a family man, says his roots are in Marondera province.
Zimbabwe is my home, as it is to millions of others, and I saw no need to leave, and I certainly wasn't going to leave just because a handful of people, you know, wanted me out of the way.
He was attacked by some suspected ZANU-PF activists when Zimbabwe introduced its land reform program in the year 2000, which resulted in more than 3,600 white commercial farmers losing their lucrative land to indigenous people. MTC lawmaker Eddie Cross, who supported black nationalists when they took up arms against the Smith government, echoed Kay's sentiment, saying he also loves Zimbabwe.
I'm totally, I feel I'm really part of the community in every way.
However, Cross believes that whites need to be careful about what they say and do in the country.
Life is not easy for the white Africans who live here. We are discriminated against in government. Pretty much across the board. In society as a whole, I personally don't feel any discrimination at all.
More than 4,000 white commercial farmers used to occupy prime land in Zimbabwe before most of them were pushed out by blacks, whose ancestors lost their land to white settlers when they first came to the country. Some of the whites were killed and others maimed in the skirmishes with land invaders. In the next edition of this two-part series, we'll focus on the impact of the land invasions on the remaining white Zimbabweans. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Kip Stube.
Thanks, Dube. And before we go, a quick look at the results played today in the PSL. Highlanders Football Club today earned 3 points after beating Flame Lily 1-0. That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe. And remember, on Live Talk, we are talking about the vendor situation. Good night.